This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Second guest today is Vincent Bruno. His website is stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com. And Bruno, welcome, or Vincent, welcome to the program. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Thank you for having me back.
Some of the things that are on your website and some of some of what is there is so mind-boggling that, well, it's mind-boggling, but it's so true, because life is bearing it out. It's amazing. Anyway, give us a little rundown on what exactly the Noahide laws are. Tell us how many there are and what they really do mean.
Yeah, sure. Before I do that, so you did quickly say that I have two websites now, because I am trying to amp this up and get a little bit more professional and trying to create something that politicians would be looking at. So I have a lot of information, a lot more information on the blog that you stated, www.stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com. But then I opened up a website. It's called www.stopnoahidelaw.com. That one doesn't have as much information, but the information is, it does have a lot of information, and it's just more succinctly put. There's a lot less writing. There's a lot. It's just kind of all clipped together a lot easier, everything in one place so that you can share it. And then on both of those websites, there is the link to the petition to have the Noahide laws repealed in the way that they are written in the United States laws, and we'll talk about that. So what are the Noahide laws? The
Noahide laws... Could you go off speakerphone?
Oh, I'm on speakerphone? Hold on. I'm not on speakerphone.
Oh, okay. You seem...
Oh, wait. Can you hear me now? Is it better now?
Not really.
It's not better now.
Okay.
Is it better now or no?
Yes, there you have it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think I know what's going on. So were you able to hear everything I just said, or is it going to be okay? Okay.
Yes.
So the Noahide laws are, for those who are just tuning into this, they are Jewish laws that come from the Babylonian Talmud that are mandatory for non-Jews. So it's Jewish law that applies to the rest of us, and it's obligatory. And the crime for breaking these Noahide laws is death by decapitation. So I know a lot of your listeners are Christian, so when they first hear these seven Noahide laws, they're going to think they sound a lot like the Ten Commandments, and they're going to wonder why anyone would think that there's something wrong here. But keep in mind, these are defined by Jews and not by Christians. So the first law is no idolatry, and when Christians hear that, they don't necessarily get too upset by that. But the thing is that under Judaism, according to a lot of interpretations, not all, but very popular opinions, Christianity is idolatry because of the Trinity, and we'll talk about that, and about how if you worship Jesus as God, you are guilty of idolatry. So the law against idolatry should, you know, concern Christians. There's also a law against blasphemy, which should also concern Christians, because Jesus was supposedly, was supposedly a blasphemer. There's no sexual immorality, which I don't know how many of your people in your program would take offense to that, but no adultery, no fornication, and things like that. There's no, just to put that part about no sexual immorality, no adultery, now that only applies between non-Jews, meaning that a non-Jew cannot practice fornication or adultery with a non-Jew or with a Jew. However, a Jewish male, and you're going to see a lot of these exceptions for Jews in these laws, a Jewish male may have sex with a either married or unmarried non-Jewish woman, and he escapes any sort of punishment. There is a two-tier system going on here. There's one rule for Jews, and then there's another rule for non-Jews. And that also applies to the next two prohibitions, which are the prohibitions against theft and murder. But Jews may steal from and murder non-Jews with impunity. There's no earthly punishment for a Jew killing or stealing from a non-Jew. The sixth law a lot of people get confused by is do not eat the flesh cut from a living animal. That comes from back in ancient times. It was a common practice. Like we see over in China, we see that in these kind of like non-Judeo-Christian lands, we know that they do eat animals alive, and this was a lot more popular. Especially what they would do is they would cut the foot off of an animal, or they would cut the leg off an animal and just sell that, and then they would leave the rest of the animal alive so that the meat would stay fresh, and then they would just cut the limbs off one by one and sell them while keeping the animal alive. So,
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we see that, we do see that in China, so we know that it was a practice in the ancient world that was that. And then the most important of the seven Noahide laws is the law for, it's the only positive law. All the other laws are negative laws, what you can't do. The positive law is to set up courts of justice to implement these Noahide laws, and of course, to execute those by beheading who do not agree or who break any of the laws. So I think that at least theoretically, maybe people can understand that there's a problem here. These are from the Talmud. They're not from the Bible. A lot of people get confused by that. They're not from the Bible. Even Jewish scholars think that they're not from the Bible. But some people will try to, both Christians and Jews, I think Jews do it more deceptively, whereas a lot of Christians might be doing it naively, where they try to tell you that the Noahide laws come from the Bible. They don't.
What was that alternative website?
StopNoahideLaw.com.
Okay, good. Alrighty.
Now the thing is that, you know, people hear this and they say, well, in theory it sounds really bad, but this is more than just theory. So, I talked about that petition to have certain laws removed in the United States. And what's going on is certain laws, more than one, if you've heard of the laws surrounding the Noahide laws in the United States, you've heard of Public Law 102-14. But there's actually 12 laws and 5 proclamations which make statements in them which are very disturbing and are inaccurate and are offensive according, you know, to the spirit of the Constitution. So they say things like that the Noahide laws are the foundation upon which the nation was founded, and that it is our responsibility to educate the population about the Noahide laws, and that without them, we're going to tumble into chaos, and that we're going to promise to sign an international scroll pledging to use education and charity to return the world to the values of the Noahide laws. Other things are, you know, stated in these laws. Rabbi Schneerson, who some of your listeners may have heard of, and we'll talk about him soon. Rabbi Schneerson was a very strong, fierce proponent of the Noahide laws. He is honored, and his birthday is recognized in these laws, and he is actually recognized as the leader of world Jewry. And we'll see why it's important, because his opinions in this regard are very important. So these laws, the way they are written, they are not unconstitutional, meaning that they don't necessarily sign the Noahide laws into law. They, however, the way these laws are written, this type of law can be repealed if it is offensive or inaccurate. So, which this is both. The United States was not founded upon Noahide law, and the idea that it was is offensive to non-Jews. So the government, the president, and the Congress have officially recognized these statements. They've come out and made them, and it's important to kind of do away with that because it sets a precedent, and it's, you know, it's at least officially stated by the government that these Noah Hyde laws are kind of what we're going from in this country. And so we want that repealed. So that's the first kind of thing where you see that there is a complicity of the United States government in this. And there has been for many years, and it's been, many laws have been signed and passed, and many recognitions have been made. This has also recently creeped up on the state level where the Alaska Congress recognized them, and where the Alabama government signed, governor signed some kind of proclamation stating the same thing, that they're the foundation of American civilization. But these Noah Hyde laws also have clout in the United Nations, where the United Nations Diplomat Corps signed onto them and said that they were obligatory. There is an organization inside the United Nations called the Institute for Noah Hyde Code, run by Rabbi Cohen. I think that their website is noahhyde.org. And they're behind this movement inside the United Nations to get the Noah Hyde laws accepted globally. So I can't tell you on what level. I know the Diplomat Corps signed onto the idea that these are obligatory for all of humanity. I guess that would mean an official recognition by the United Nations. We have to look a little bit deeper into that. But he's trying to push for getting the United Nations installed, he said it himself, into the constitutions of all the world governments. So that is that organization and the United Nations agenda as far as that. Then there is the issue that the Vatican has also recognized these Noah Hyde laws as obligatory twice. An official proclamation, the Holy See, has made it known that there are limits on individual freedoms and that we need to kind of accept these Noah Hyde laws as incumbent, I think is the word that they used, upon ourselves. And there's still more. There is, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get your listeners to understand that this is a branching octopus or hydra that is not toothless. The next disturbing problem is that there's a growing alliance between this Noah Hyde movement, Jews who believe in these Noah Hyde laws and implementing them, and Sharia Islam. So Islam carries basically, some people recognize that the Noah Hyde laws sound a lot like Sharia, especially with the beheading for idolatry, for blasphemy, for sexual immorality. Basically, what the Jews are telling the Muslims is, to a degree, they're saying, look, your Sharia actually works for us, and Sharia is actually complying with the Noahide, and we can kind of work together on this and get along. So they are getting Islam under their belt, and there's also the Israeli government that is involved in this. Well, before we talk about the Israeli government, let's just quickly talk about the proselytization conversion that's going on. Now, Noahide, then there's the Noahide laws, but the Noahide laws are a spiritual system which you can follow. And you can adopt these Noahide laws onto yourself and listen to the guidance of rabbis, and you become known, become what is known as a Noahide. So oftentimes these Noahides will go to Israel and pledge allegiance to a certain rabbinical council over there. And they pledge to spread the Noahide laws, to live by the Noahide laws. And that's a growing movement around the world. I know a lot of your members probably will think that they haven't met one. Go online, go into Facebook, you know, find Noahide websites, and you'll see that around. NoahideWorldCenter.org, AskNoah.org. Those are some conversion centers that are going on. And the Israeli government is behind these conversions. So they are behind people going into other nations and bringing people to these Noahide laws. And if you, for Christians, when you, these Noahides, all the ones that I've met, and when you go through their literature, they're very anti-Christian. You know, they, really, it's a very anti-Christian movement, and I, you know, I know that's what's important to your readers, to your listeners in regards to their lives. So there's the Israeli government that's behind it. Now, how much longer until our next section?
Let's see, we have about 5 minutes.
Okay, so...
until our next commercial.
Okay, until our next commercial. Well, maybe in the next commercial we can start getting into Freemasonry, because Freemasonry is also involved in this and is going to have a little bit more to do with what we're going to talk about today, because the last time I was on here we went through the Noahide Laws of Depth. I think we went through a strong... We went through everything, and we talked about the infiltration of Black Lives Matter, how they are, what they're doing is they're going in from both angles, and they're saying, well, look, there's a lot of revolutionary activity, a lot of anti-Christian activity, a lot of Marxist activity going on in Black Lives Matter, and this is all because we have moral chaos, and so if we had... You know, they focus on the theft that's going on with the Black Lives Matter. And they'll, you know, they're telling them, well, if we had a Noahide system in place, we would be better protected. We'd be better protected from murder. You know, we need the Noahide laws to protect us. But then on the other end, they're going into the black communities and they are telling them that, their work for kind of racial justice, as they would call it, is part of the growing It's part of the Noahide laws, particularly the coming of the Noahide court. So they're going in on the black side and using their grievances and saying, well, the way it was put to me by one Jew was that they're saying if cops are killing or if cops are shooting, you know, I know that there's, if their argument is that if more blacks are being shot disproportionately, then the Noahide laws are being disproportionately implemented and there's an injustice, and so this needs to be corrected. And, you know, from what I've talked about to even some Jews said that, you know, they should set up Noahide tribunals, and the verdict of the Noahide tribunal could be violent. So, you know, we see that type of infiltration there. And but today I want to talk a little bit more about some of the more subtle ways that they are infiltrating Christianity, but also some older things, especially, you know, to do with Freemasonry and things like that. So did you have any questions before the next segment?
No. I'm just trying to take in everything you're saying.
Yeah, I know. It can, you know, I know it's a lot, and there's definitely a lot more on the website to go through, but
let me just make a comment. The one website, stopnoahidelaw.com, when you go there, you're going to get a warning that it's unsafe, and if you proceed, your computer's going to blow up or some crazy thing. Just ignore that and follow through.
Oh, really? I'm going to have to fix that. Yeah, they must have done that to me. I think I got shadow banned on Facebook with my other .blogspot.com because I was posting and people were telling me they weren't getting it. And then when I switched over to stopnoahidelaw.com, when I changed the website, people started seeing it again. So Facebook was kind of been, shadow banning it. Sorry, did I fade out there for a second again?
Pardon me?
Okay, no, I thought it was hard to hear me again because I was keeping the phone away from my
mouth. You're good. You're good.
So Facebook has been trying to hide it, and
Facebook? Oh, really? They're trying to censor people? No.
Yeah.
I'm teasing.
No, I mean, at least they know, at least it's being tracked as kind of like an undesirable site on there, and they are very, I've been doing lots of activism on this. I did physical public activism with signs, Stop Noahide Law, and information in New York City in the subway terminals, in Grand Central Station, and in Port Authority. And they never, they're very quiet, but you don't really respond. I think
okay.
They something. Okay.
We're going to a break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
God's with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we
Alrighty, this is Deanna, and we are back with our second guest today, Vincent Bruno, B-R-U-N-O. His websites are stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com and stopnoahidelaw.com, on which you will get a warning that it's unsafe, but just follow through and it's fine. Your computer's not going to blow up. Nothing's going to happen.
So I was just to finish up what I was just, the one point I was ending at, before was that, I've done lots of, there's internet activism and there's real life activism going out into the public subways and with signs and handing out literature. And, it's been, they're very quiet. There you will find that the Jews are, very careful about coming out against these things. I don't think that they want too much attention placed on it. So that at least has been my my experience. But so that hopefully is a recap of everything that we have talked about before in the last program, which was about 2 hours. So I didn't want to be repetitious, so I decided to, I said, let's go into a little bit in detail in one subject that might interest people, and that is Freemasonry. So we already said that the Noahide laws have a lot behind them. They have the United States government, the UN, the Vatican, Islam, the Israeli government, and these converts. But what they also have working for them is Freemasonry. So a lot of people just don't know about the extensive connection between the Noahide laws and Freemasonry. So one thing is that the old charges of their constitution, the 1738 constitution, stated a Mason is obliged by his tenure to observe the moral law as a true Noahide, and if he rightly understands the craft, he will never be a stupid atheist or an irreligious libertine. There are other places in other constitutions where they come out and say that, you know, if you want to be a Freemason, you got to be a Noahide, or that they're one and the same. And in some of them, they actually come out and list all of the seven Noahide laws, so we know that they're talking about the same thing. When you start going through their literature, you'll see a lot of Freemasons will say that, well, a Noahide is a Freemason. You know, they'll give you the definition of Noahide in their compendiums, and the definition is Noahide. They believe that Noah set up the Noahide courts in their literature. Then some of them say that the Noahide laws are obligatory for Freemasons. Give me 1 second. They believe in the Noahide legend, so they believe they're called the Noahide laws because supposedly these laws were given to Noah when he exited the ark. So, and because Noah is the forefather of all of humanity, therefore these laws apply to everyone, whereas the Old Testament laws were supposedly only given to Israel on Mount Sinai, but these preceded Mount Sinai, so they are applicable to us all. So the Freemasons believe in that legend that when Noah came out, he got those seven laws. There is a Freemason order called the Order of the Noahites, or Noahites, and also some Freemasons say that Freemasonry came out of an older order pre-Freemason called the Order of Noahites or Cavalier Prussians. And when you go into some Freemason oaths, some of the Freemason oaths contain the oath that the Freemason will act as a true Noahite. And finally, let's just look at this last thing. There is the 21st degree of Freemasonry is called the Noahide, or sometimes it's called the Prussian Knight, but it's also called the Noahide. So we see that there's a lot of cross-reference between Freemasonry and the Noahide laws. And another interesting thing that happened, I don't want to forget, is that during the colonial period, when the British ruled India, they established Freemason lodges over there. And they wouldn't let the Hindus in because they were polytheists, but they would allow the Muslims in. But another group that they let in is a very small population over in India called the Parsis, who are Zoroastrians, who practice something closer to monotheism. I don't think it's quite monotheism, but at least it's closer. The Freemasons actually allowed them into the lodges and gave them the designation of Noahide. So they said, you are Noahides, and you are allowed into the lodges. So we know that they were thinking about this in their lodges, and that you needed to be a Noahide to get into the lodge. And interestingly enough, there is a current Freemason author who is working to bring together Zoroastrianism, Mazdaism, the Parsi religion, and Christianity together into like a sort of Noahide religion or ideology. So that's the basis of what the connections are between Freemasonry. It sounds like we're going to go again, right?
Yes. Okay, we will be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. And our second guest today is Vincent Bruno. His websites are stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com and stopnoahidelaw.com. And they're both secure websites. We have an email question. Is it true that the Noahide laws would discriminate against the LGBT community?
Yes, they would. So under the rubric of sexual immorality, it does. I know, obviously, I know there's a lot of people, particularly in the Christian movement, that I think there is a tendency to kind of say that homosexuality or the rise in the observance or visibility of homosexuality in the country has a lot to do with Jewish influence. So I get asked about this a lot. People get confused and they try to say that the LGBTQ agenda is kind of wrapped into Noahide. I would say the only way I see that happening is if they are the theory that they are trying to advance what they don't like so that they could come in with the cure.
Oh, I see. Sure.
So, the only way I could see it relating is that way. But if you go into the circles that are really pushing these Noahide laws, you're going to find anti-LGBTQ sentiments. They use that a lot in order to get Christians on their side. They use LGBTQ and abortion. And they say, well, we don't believe in either of those and we're against them. And so I think you can, you know, they try to tout the Noahide laws as being superior or, you know, ethically viable for Christians, even though it would also do away with them. I don't know, we could probably try to dedicate this next half hour to the rest of the stuff, and then I guess, you know, we want to take questions
sure.
or something after that.
Sure, go ahead.
In this regard. So, now there is, before we talked, we probably did talk about this because I talk about it every time I do a general show on the Noahide laws, and that is the sort of infiltration and subversion of other religions in order to get an in with Noahide. So they're doing this with all religions. They're doing it with Hinduism. They're doing it with Islam to a degree by going in and telling them that they're Noahide compliant. But they're really doing a lot with Christianity. So the modern thing is this. There's a few different routes that they're getting into the Christian church. The one is through this kind of Hebrew roots or return to the Old Testament type of ideologies where they are bringing in rabbis and rabbinical literature and saying, well, we want to focus a lot more on the Old Testament again. We want to be thinking about this, and who knows the Old Testament better than rabbis? And then, you know, they get you to listening to these rabbis and interfaith dialogues, and then the rabbis start bringing in the Talmudic literature and the rabbinical literature, and they can kind of slowly, one thing that they want to do, one way that they work, is that these Noahides set up something that's called a religious council. So they would set up a Christian religious council. And they would open up your religion and go through it, and they would comb out what is acceptable under the Noahide laws and what is not. So one thing that is not acceptable under Noahide law is the Trinity, because under the prohibition of no idolatry, you have to believe that God is one and not three. And you also would not be able to believe that Jesus is God or worship him as God. So what they try to do, part of it, now they eventually just, want complete abandonment of Christianity, totally, and for people to become Noahites. But what they start out with is, well, Jesus was just a prophet, Jesus was just a rabbi, you know, he isn't deified, so, you know, they try to get you away from those things. They're really working hard to get people away from the Trinity, but they also have this other method, which is they try, you know, because a lot of Christians find out that idolatry can be prohibitive of them, and they become concerned, and then the Jews come in and they tell them that Christianity is under a designation called Shittuf, S-H-I-T-U-F, and Shittuf is a designation for a way of worship that is not monotheistic, but it's not polytheistic. So they're basically saying, if you're a non-Jew, maybe you're allowed to have an intermediary, Jesus Christ. But there's a lot of definitions around what you could believe he is. And the thing is that you're only allowed to believe this in belief inside your head. But as soon as you go and you say Jesus is Lord, or you go to bow before a cross, or you wear a cross around your neck, which I've heard as well from reputable rabbis, you are practicing idolatry. So they have different subtle ways of infiltrating the church, stripping away what they don't like, particularly the Trinity, and also making you feel as though you're going to be okay under this Shittuf thing. Like, you know, don't worry, we're all going to be able to practice our own religion. We have religious freedoms under the Noahide laws, but that's not really what the truth is when you get down to it. And a lot about these Noahide laws, they'll confuse you a lot, because it's all about, they'll say, oh, it's opinion, this rabbi says this, that rabbi says that. Well, we shouldn't even be having these discussions, and especially when it comes to what's written in the U.S. law, the Vatican, the United Nations, and I mean, just because there's, even the best interpretation of this is not a good thing. You know, and like we said, that Rabbi Schneerson, who we talked about, Rabbi Schneerson, who was lauded in those public laws and was the largest proponent of the Noahide laws, he said that Christianity was idolatry, and he said that the Noahide laws should be implemented through force. So we see the more radical end of this is the end that is actually getting the most attention and is the most powerful. So that's kind of like what's going on in the world today, but there is an interesting side note that I've gotten into recently. So I have another blog called bewiseasserpents.blogspot.com, just like bewiseasserpents.blogspot.com. And in this blog, I go into the details of how Freemasonry, Judeo-Freemasonry, is connected to the three interconnected cults of Christian Science, Jehovah's Witness, and Mormons. And I know you were raised Mormon, and we got into the Freemasonry and Mormonism a little bit before. But so we now know that Freemasonry is heavily influenced and even based in Noahidism. What's interesting from what I know, from what I've read, and let me give you the name of who said it, who exactly said this. But I can't find him now. Oh, Makey, Albert Makey, who's the really famous one. It's described where
M-A-K-I?
M-A-C-K-E-Y.
Okay, yeah, Mackey, okay.
Where that, what's it called? Where Freemasonry rejects the Trinity. Okay, so there is no doctrine of the Trinity. When you go into a lot of Jewish and Freemasonry, they talk about how Freemasonry is based in the Kabbalah. A lot of Freemasonry myths go back to the temple. It is much more a Judeo-mystic religion than it is a Christian mystic religion. There is very little actually Christian in it. And from what it seems, they reject the Trinity, which they would have to do if they were Noahides. Now, the Trinity is actually very popular amongst most Christians, but interestingly enough, the three religions which were founded in Freemasonry all reject the Trinity: Christian Science, Jehovah's Witness, and Mormonism. So, now let's just get into the connections. Let's start with Christian Science. So actually, Mary Baker Eddy, who founded Christianity, her husband was a Freemason. He was buried as a Master Mason, and he obtained the degree of Royal Archmason. When she died, when Mary Baker Eddy died, Freemasons built her statue over her gravestone, which was a pyramid, and they also donated a boat to her. What's interesting is that she has a pyramid over her statue, and also, which is built by Freemasons, and so does Charles Taze Russell, who is the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses. He has a pyramid over his gravestone, and both the Jehovah's Witness and Christian Science emblem were the cross and crown, which were very popular amongst Freemasons. Freemasons built Christian Science churches. Their architects were Freemasons, and they added a lot of Masonic symbolism. It's interesting, did you know that Christian Scientists were not allowed to join any other societies except Freemasonry? They were allowed to join, but nothing else. Before their churches were built, Christian Scientists met in Freemason halls. Mary Baker Eddy had her first Bible readings inside Mason halls. There is a list of very famous Freemasons in high positions, and it's extensive. And it's interesting to note that there's an article about how there were so many Jews in Freemasonry and Christian Science, and the reason that they said that they were there is because it rejected the Trinity. This rejection of the Trinity is really important to Jews and Noahides, and well, that's one of the reasons why so many Jews were involved. And Christian Science actually believed in the restoration of the physical nation of Israel, and that was, you know, early on they actually believed in that. So let's move on to Jehovah's Witnesses. Jehovah's Witnesses were founded by Charles Taze Russell. Oftentimes before they had their own kingdom halls, they met in Freemason halls. It's interesting that Charles Taze Russell was a Zionist before there was even Zionism. I think Herschel was the first Zionist, right, that was running around kind of spreading all of this, and but he went before that, and he believed that the Jews should return to Israel. Freemasons,
Napoleon said that in 1799.
What?
That the Jews should return to Israel.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. I'll give you a quote.
B'nai B'rith actually funded the Jehovah's Witnesses because they were Zionist supremacists. And Jewish Freemasons backed and financed the Jehovah's Witnesses magazines. The founder, Charles Taze Russell, asked the Rothschilds to establish Israel. He believed that Jews were intellectually and spiritually superior. He believed that God's land covenant with the Jews was still valid, and that the Jews would be the first to receive the Messiah's blessings. And he also believed that the Palestinian Arabs were non-progressive, and that their land sold to the Jews was improved. Now, you said you were raised, or not raised, but you were Mormon for a while. I think that Mormonism is the one with the most documentation of connections to Freemasonry, and Judeo-Freemasonry, as they're almost, you know, self-proclaimed. Joseph Smith's parents were members of occult societies. His members of his family were Freemasons.
Joseph Smith's father and brother were Freemasons, and then Joseph Smith also joined. And I was aware of this, but I didn't realize I didn't realize a lot of things. And you say, well, a lot of people belong to Freemasons. It was just a popular guys club, right? Nope.
Yeah. Really wasn't. Well, I mean, I think that there's certain ideology that goes along with it, or a certain kind of
up in the upper degrees.
Yes. So Joseph Smith was actually inducted into Freemasonry in 1842, and what's important to know is he was made a Mason on site, which means he didn't need to go through all of the rituals in order to become a Freemason. I guess because he had this cult going for him and he had some power behind him, they just let him in without going through all the initiations. And his father, as you said, was a Freemason. But the first five presidents of the Mormon Church were all Freemasons. It said, from what I read, there were self-proclaimed secret society occultists who claimed them that they were Jews, and they mentored Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith and the early Mormon Church believed Jews would return to Israel, and that's because the Book of Mormon strongly hints at pro-Zionism. Joseph Smith actually sent an emissary to Israel to facilitate the return of the Jews, and there's a very extensive research on how Masonic symbols populate a lot of these Mormon temples and things like that. So, what I want to point out is that I think that these earlier versions, I think that they were ironing things out, where Freemasons were making sure that these religions that they were creating were in line with the Noahide laws. They were in line with the anti-Trinitarianism. You know, no divinity of Christ, and it's basically a form of religious engineering. I think that this is an older way of doing things, but I would add Jehovah's Witness, Christian Science, and Mormonism to the subversive element of the Noahide laws, and I think that they are probably indirectly controlled. The last thing that I just want to get into quickly, it's very interesting, the opposite side of this is the Seventh-day Adventist Church. If you go to my blog, butharmlessasdoves.blogspot.com, you're going to learn that the Seventh-day Adventist, William Miller, was a Freemasonry, but then supposedly went against it. And I believe he stayed anti-Freemasonry because anti-Freemasonry remained in the Seventh-day Adventist Church for a long time. And actually, they are stated Trinitarians. They broke with anti-Trinitarianism. They are Trinitarians. But they also had a lot of involvement with the Third Reich. I think that had to do. The Third Reich actually felt comfortable using their magazines, and they felt very comfortable working with the Third Reich. And I think that was because of their anti-Freemasonry. I think that there was a lot of understanding between those two. And give me one second. Oh yeah, Ellen White was the one that got them out of the non-Trinitarianism. So it's just an interesting, you know, people tend to group those four religions together, but Seventh-day Adventist stands out as anti-Freemasonry, and it's just obviously not under Jewish control or Freemason control at all by their history.
Okay, I found the Napoleon Bonaparte. Let's see. He said, with the establishment of the Enlightenment philosophy, Napoleon Bonaparte, a Freemason, initiated into the Army Philadelph Lodge in 1798 while camped near Acre, which is in Palestine, that he was going to restore Palestine to them. He then ascended the throne as Emperor of France and was in that position from 1804 to 1815. But, yes, he did say that.
Hmm. Yeah, wherever you find Freemasonry, you're going to find a connection to the Jews. You're going to find a connection to the restoration of the temple. You're going to find, you know, that leaning Zionism, and they're gonna go hand in hand. But the way you really nail it together, what really brings it together, is that Noahide connection, that the Freemasons are Noahide, and that they are working for that agenda, that Freemasonry is a Noahide compliant belief system that you can get involved in, and it is aiding and supporting the Jews to, in this Noahide system, they are a level above us. They are the spiritual race. They are the caste, the priestly caste, and they are here to teach us the Noahide laws, and then we are to absorb them and to implement them in our host countries. And this can go on now, but there's, you know, different people that have beliefs about, you know, the Messiah, or the anti-Messiah, the Antichrist. I know that people bring this up where, you know, the beheading, that it's, you know, you're beheaded, and they say that in the book of Revelation, the synagogue of Satan, and being beheaded for the testimony of Jesus. And, you know, a lot of people see a connection between the Noahide laws, Freemasonry, and the, you know, the beast system, the New World Order. I personally believe that if there were to be anything like that, going on, I think that what we're looking at is the Noahide laws. I mean, it will persecute everyone. It'll persecute everyone who doesn't support it. It is gaining power, and it kind of like fits a lot of the pieces, you know, when it comes to certain kind of prophecies and stuff like that. It fits a lot of the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
That's that tangent that I, you know, maybe wanted to start out. Maybe when people call in, we can try to stay around these topics, either Noahide law or the Freemasonry, the Jehovah's Witness, Christian Science,
right.
Mormons, Seventh-day Adventist, and, you know, I know people like to talk about all different kinds of things, but if, as long as it has to do with the Noahide laws and Freemasonry and this general type of idea, I think that, you know, how much more time do we have left in this segment before we start taking phone calls?
We are going to a break in a couple of minutes, and then we will open the phone lines when we come back. Well, actually, we're going to a break, then we'll have the top of the hour, then we'll take phone calls in the third hour. I created a page if one visits spingola.com, and you look at some of the buttons. On the right-hand side, it's Leaving the Cult, and I have a lot of information, about the Mormon Church, and it's pretty well ground. It's very authentic and it's very interesting. And after,
I know they have a lot more things going for them than just Freemasonry when it comes to, you know, surprises about the church, but
Oh, yes.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on with them. And, you know, I was raised Jehovah's Witness, so, you know, they had a lot going on with them, too. And I'm sure so did Christian Science. But, you know, they always, you know, people tend to lump them together, and they are. They're kind of like three prongs. You know, I don't know to what degree that the Freemasons and Judeo-Freemasonry still has, like, maybe direct control, but at least that is the river that they are flowing in, and you can see this type of religious engineering that is going on, and it has a different form today.
So, oh, absolutely. You know. And even with Mormonism, in the Sunday classes and in church, you know, we talked about God the Eternal Father and Jesus Christ and the Holy Ghost. But then you get into another ceremony, and it's totally different. You wonder if you're in the right place, because it's not going along with what you learned on Sunday in those Sunday school classes. It's just totally, totally different. And the other thing, too, is that the church has a huge connection to the government. When you look at the state of Utah and learn about all of the tests that were done in the southern area of Utah, that killed a lot of sheep, killed a lot of everything. And they had the first focus center in the country, and they are a corporation. They are a 501c3. And any corporation, any 501c3 is a corporation, and they are obligated to follow the government. And this designation was not necessary. The only reason that they altered it was because they said, well, if you become a corporation, and then you can claim deductions on your taxes, which, you know, well, that's good. We can, you know, declare all the 10% tithing and the fast offerings and the building fund and all this other stuff. We can declare those things. So, yeah, and the other thing too, which was kind of interesting, they have an agency within the church called Strengthening Church Members Committee. Now that sounds really terrific, until you find out that if you say anything negative in public about the church, your local authorities are going to come after you. Okay, we'll be right back. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right. Excuse me. We are back, and our guest is Vincent Bruno. And, of course, you can call in at 800-313-9443 with questions, and keep them on topic, because that's what, well, yeah, keep them on topic. So anyway, as I was saying, if you say something negative, you're going to get called on the carpet, and it's not going to be, you know, well, they say, okay, we're going to excommunicate you or disfellowship you or whatever. So it's just a very interesting situation. And as I learned Mormonism from my grandmother, and of course my grandmother would never tell me anything that was false. Her parents came over from Denmark. They had been proselyted there. They left Denmark and came over. And my grandmother was just a delightful, wonderful, wonderful person, very artistic, I just loved her. She was just a wonderful, wonderful person. And so I just accepted. And then, because I like to investigate things I taught seminary quite a long time, 5 years, which is a class. It's an early morning class, starts at 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock for children, young adults who are in high school. And it's early morning, Monday through Friday. And, we'd go through, the scriptures. We would go through the Old Testament, the New Testament, Book of Mormon, and then the Doctrine and Covenants. And as I would be reading in the Old Testament, I thought, ooh, this is awful. And of course, a lot of people think that the Old Testament is the singular book for the Jewish religion, which it isn't.
No.
It's the Talmud, which is, excuse me, it's an ongoing, they're still writing it. And, anyway, I thought, well, okay, so it says here that you can go in and you can assault a city, you can kill all the men, and you can take the women and children as sex slaves. I think, I don't think this is right. It really got me to thinking. And then in the Book of Mormon, it talks about how great Christopher Columbus was. And my study of Christopher Columbus was that he was a mass murderer. He left Portugal, Spain, the day before they kicked all the Jewish people out of the country. They've been kicked out of a lot of countries. And so he left at that day, the next morning he left. And so he was very familiar with the Madeira, sugar plantations and whatnot. And, he arrived in what is now the Dominican Republic in Haiti. And within a few short years, the natives were slaughtered, and some of the ways that they worked them, but they also roasted them on spits, and they let big dogs tear their flesh, and all this other stuff. And I'm thinking, here the Book of Mormon is saying what a great man he was. He was a piece of garbage who was slaughtering children and women, and a whole generation of people. He reduced the population in 8 short years to, I don't have the figures in front of me, but so I thought, this book is not what I thought it was. And, so I just began to study, and, I lost interest. I lost faith in what I had faith in. But the first time that I went to another meeting outside of a Sunday meeting, I thought, as I said before, I thought, gosh, this is totally different than what I learned on Sunday. And the dogma's different, everything's different, and why do I have to wear this stuff, and why do I have to make pledges, and why do I have to do certain handshakes? What the heck is going on? But everybody was really happy. And I thought, well, if everybody else is really happy and thinking it's okay, then it must be okay. I was very young at that time. And, yeah, it was pretty... it was an involvement, definitely.
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of people have lots to say about these types of, Mormon, Jehovah's Witness, Christian Science, a lot of people have the same type of complaints. And there's obviously kind of like an element of social coercion there,
right.
You know, a cult-likeness to it. And I think that part of that, you know, goes back to their foundations, you know, and that what influenced them and the type of spiritual ties that they have. I think that people sense that, and they will always have that element to them, that element of type of control and trying to get you thinking in a certain direction. And my theory is that at least partially one of the things was to kind of prepare you. So what I've heard is that because Jehovah's Witnesses reject the Trinity, they are now considered Noahites. Do you know, oh God, what is his name? He's really famous. Let me just look him up really quick. He's always doing these shows. I'm sure you've heard of him. What is his name? Give me one second. Let me just look him up. Chovius Singer. Do you know who Chovius Singer is?
No, I don't.
Chovius Singer does a lot of interfaith dialogue between Christians and Jews. He is more critical of Christianity than a lot of Jews will be openly, but he has said that Jehovah's Witnesses are at least closer to the Noahide because they reject the Trinity. And what's interesting about Jehovah's Witnesses is that they claim that what's going to happen is that the beast system is going to rise up, and it's going to start, there, according to their prophecy, it's going to rise up and it's going to start banning religion. And they're going to say that there can't be any more religion on earth. And they say that the Jehovah's Witnesses, because of their non-involvement, they're not political, they don't vote, you know, they separate themselves from the system, that they are going to be the very last religion that is attacked. And that would make sense if the idea is, you know, you're slowly Noahidizing everyone, you know, there's a period where, you know, they're not ready to leave Christianity, but get them off the Trinity. Now it's get them into the Old Testament, get them off the Trinity. You know, maybe the older system was going to make them Jehovah's Witness, make them Mormon, make them Christian Science. But then eventually what the plan would be is to get rid of all that totally and just have it rabbinical controlled from Jerusalem, Noahidism. And but they seem to be self-aware of that, that, you know, that they're going to be allowed to exist until the end. Other religions are going to get persecuted more. Trinitarian Christians would be persecuted more. The Jehovah's Witnesses probably would be left to last. With Islam, there is, in Islam, they're telling them that Islam is not idolatry, but still, when you go deeper into it, a lot of Islam, it's not 100% kosher. What they're just going in and they're telling you you're fine for now until they have enough power to get rid of you. And don't forget, a lot of that has to do with these conversions, that you go in and you get the Christian church thinking everything's okay. You slowly get people converting over and over, and Noahites, more and more and more and more Noahites. And then you have all the help that they're getting from these large entities, you know, and then it's basically a frog not knowing that it's in boiling water until it's too late type of thing.
How true. It's also very interesting, and you brought this up, that that Joseph Smith did send somebody over to Israel in 1846 to dedicate the land for the return of the Jews. And then the Mormon Church also beautified Jerusalem. They spent millions of dollars beautifying the city, and they now have a center, the BYU Center, on top of the Mount of Olives. And they are renting the land because the land is still, it was won, quote unquote, won during warfare. And so they couldn't sell the land. But it's interesting that I was there in 1999 on a Mormon tour, and we went to the temple store, and we went all over, and we were told, whatever you do, by the tour guide, whatever you do, don't try to proselyte, just don't go there at all. And I'm thinking, that's weird. Here we've given, I didn't realize at the time that we had built up Jerusalem financially, millions of dollars. And the center was there, the BYU center was there. But I had no idea. I had no idea. But I didn't.
Right, they didn't want you preaching to the Jews, right?
Right, absolutely.
Right.
No.
Now this is like, that's another big thing that's going on around this, where the Jews can be Jews. They don't need to be converted. They're fine the way that they are. Everyone else, and you'll see that a lot in this Noahization, where it's like, well, the Jews are off. You're not supposed to convert them. You know, a lot of these churches that are signing on to this Noahite and the Catholic Church, and I guess, like you said, the Mormons, they have these pacts with the Jews that they're not going to try to bring
right.
them over.
Right.
You know, they're not going to try to bring them over. And, you know, that has a lot to do with the religious engineering.
Sure. We do have some callers lined up.
Oh, sure.
Okay, let's take Andrea in Oklahoma. Yes, Andrea?
Hello?
Yes,
yes hello. Thank you. Back in 2013, you had a doctor day on.
Oh, yes, Lorraine Day.
Yes, and she brought up this topic, and you brought her back for 3 hours, and she talked about this topic, which set my hair on fire. Supposedly this law was passed in during the, I think, the
George
second
H.W.
Bush and not the first Bush.
George H.W. Bush is the one that signed the papers, and if you visit my website, I have a button. It says Noahide laws, and you can read the document. You can read about her husband's experience because he was in Congress at the time.
Yeah, it was passed by, or it was made by three people on Christmas Day or something, and they were the only ones there that came up with this law, and then it was signed in by the Bush. Which one? Who cares? They were both
George H.W.
The thing is that the most famous law is the 102-14, which was signed by George H.W. Bush, but similar laws were signed by Reagan and Clinton. Very similar laws were also, and it was four Congress people that stayed behind. Dr. Lorraine Day's husband is Bill Dannenmeyer, and what happened was that he, let me just find out where Noah, what happened was in his letter, he said that Congress was told that everyone would go home for the day and that there would be no more voting. So everyone went home, but only four people stayed behind. And those were Ben Gilman, Tom Ridge, Rob Michael, and Tom Sawyer. These, four congressmen stayed behind and they voted on public law 102-14 to have these statements recognized by the government. But that wasn't the first law. That's only the most famous law. And there's other proclamations as well that were also need to be repealed.
Well, I've called from time to time and talked to my representatives and named the law and the information about it, and they all seem like they're shocked. And they don't do anything about it. It's like, you know, as a representative, I expect my Congress critters to do something about things and appeal something that is so disgusting and awful, and it doesn't need to even be there.
Yeah.
I don't know that all Jewish people think this way. I really don't think they do. I think they're most of them are kind, but evidently there's some people that want power, and they want total power. But there's so much, you know, even with the Masons, when they finally get up to the 33rd degree, they find out that they're worshiping Satan. And it's all throughout Hollywood that they can't entertainers can't perform. And who owns Hollywood is a lot of very rich Jewish people, and who owns the media is very rich Jewish people, and it seems as though they create, I mean, either you follow their laws or you don't perform. If you're a singer or an actor, you're not going to be working unless you sign your soul over to Satan, and there's been a lot of stars that have come forward and said that. They usually have all these tattoos of the shush, or they have one eye covered, and they all show the sign. But it's like all this is set because of Satan. And here in Oklahoma, they built a statue that was 14 feet high of Satan that was going to go on our Capitol grounds. They have Moloch on the Vatican where you sacrifice your babies. They have that on the Vatican ground. It's a big bull. It's showing up everywhere, and it's all about Satan. We did not let Satan here. I went talked to my representatives, and they said, well, not on their watch. And so where did it go? It went to Detroit. And I mentioned that at church, and there was a girl that came up to me later and said, yes, it was, but Detroit didn't keep it. So where it went from there, I guess I haven't searched for it, but it's just, I couldn't believe anybody would make a 14-foot statue of Satan sitting on a throne, and there's a little girl on one side and a little boy on the other side. So, you know, all this is setting up, if they do things very slowly, and they, I mean, Deanna was aware of all at the Super Bowl. They make sacrifices the night before, and they have this ceremony where they're crossing the bridge, and everybody that's watching is supposedly being, you know, brought in, and they don't know it while they're watching the Super Bowl, but it's at halftime. All these weird things are happening, and it's just, we don't know it until we know it.
Well, just before we go to the next person, to just conclude on what you said about them bringing that Satan thing there, I know it's interesting. One of the theories that I heard is people are saying, well, if that the Jews want these type of Old Testament-sounding laws, why do they keep trying to get the Ten Commandments removed from the courthouses? Now, a lot of that could just secular Jews, that's what they believe in. But the other thing is that they believe the Ten Commandments are for the Jews. The Seven Commandments are for us. The Old Testament is not for us. The Old Testament is for the Jews. That was given to them at Sinai. But Noah, who is the father of everyone according to them, were given these seven Noahide laws, and that's why that's what they want in the courthouses. You know what I mean? But because we're not supposed to follow those laws. That's, the Jews have their own laws. It's a separate law for them. So,
okay.
It's an issue.
We're going to a break. We'll be right back.
God's with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take
all righty. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Vincent Bruno. His websites are StopNoahideLaw.blogspot.com and StopNoahideLaw.com. When Andrea was talking, I thought about the phallic symbol at the Vatican, and of course you can see these phallic symbols in Washington, and you have to ask, what is that for? What is that? Okay. We have Chance in West Virginia.
Hello, Deanna. Hello, Mr. Bruno. Mr. Bruno, I have to applaud you. You hit the nail right on the head. I researched all these sects or cults, if you want to call them, a long time ago. And let me tell you, the most powerful families and bloodlines were trying to destroy Christianity for the longest time. Right now, they already conquered the lukewarm, brainwashed, mainstream, organized religions. You know, they moved into spirits. These were powerful names, these powerful families, like the Bakers, for instance. Mary Baker Eddy. Most people don't realize that the Baker family was a very powerful family up there with the Collinses, the Russells. And they moved in the 19th century. They moved into spiritualism. So what these powerful families have been doing was setting up these sects and cults for the weak-minded. You know, Christian Science, like you mentioned, that was a front for witchcraft from the very beginning. Did you know, Mr. Bruno, that Nancy Astor was a big supporter of Christian Science and socialism? Now, that's just the Astor family, mind you.
If you go into discussions about Christian Science, Jehovah's Witness, and Mormonism, you're always going to run into witchcraft. You're always going to get into those things, just like you're going to get into Freemasonry, because a lot of Freemasonry, even though Freemasonry is the combination, like it's very Kabbalistic, it's the combination, it's Jewish mysticism, but modern Jewish mysticism has a lot of paganism in it, and has a lot
of witchcraft.
So because they are so influenced by Freemasonry, you're going to find witchcraft elements inside those religions.
Yep, and you know, the Christian Science Monitor ties in with the occult system. See, this is how, what they did over the years, the powerful families, what they did was weaken organized religion to a point where good people got sick of organized religion. They seen it was being watered down. So they set up all these cults like Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Christians, even Scientology. Because people got dissatisfied with organized religions because they infiltrated it and watered it down. So good folks join these cults really not knowing what they were getting into. This is a hatred they have for Christianity. And here's another thing. Did you ever hear of a guy named Joseph Harsh, Mr. Bruno?
No.
Let me tell you who he was. He was the editor of the Christian Science Monitor. He belonged to the CFR, and he also belonged to the Pilgrim Society. Are you aware of the Pilgrim?
Let Vincent respond to your... Ask Vincent a question.
Yes.
He was telling me about the Harsh. What is your question? What, Mr. Who?
Well, this man, Joseph Harsh, he was the editor of the Christian Science Monitor. He belonged to the CFR, and he also belonged to the Pilgrim Society. Are you aware of the Pilgrim Society, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
It's a one-world order. It's similar to the Bohemian Grove. It's one of those skull and bones organizations. They believe in globalism and one-world order. Now, this is the editor of the Christian Science Monitor.
Do you have a question for...
Well, the question is this. People should realize that all these sects and cults are occultic and are based and steeped in witchcraft.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, if Mr. Bruno agrees with that, I'm sure he does. Correct, Mr. Bruno?
Yeah, to a certain degree, I think that there's definitely a lot of opposition. It's definitely, when you read, I have lots of quotes up on the blogspot.com, stopnoahidelaw.blogspot.com, in the Freemason section that talk about how Judaism is Freemasonry and Freemasonry is Judaism, and how without all the rites and rituals of Judaism, now this is an Old Testament Judaism, this is Babylonian Talmud Kabbalistic Judaism, that a lot of those rites and rituals have been infused, and we know that the Kabbalah has a lot of European witchcraft in it, for sure. So, I agree with that kind of stuff.
Exactly. The Kabbalah, Freemasonry, it's all tied into those cults I've mentioned, those sects. And that's just the way they set it up for that particular reason. Okay, thank you for taking my call now.
Okay,
thank you.
All righty, let's talk with Charles in Florida. And could you increase your volume?
How you doing this evening, Deanna?
And you?
Yeah, I'm fine. I hope I'm not off topic, but I wanted to point out the national, the name of the law that was passed that pushes the idea of the Noah Hyde laws is National Law Day. I think education that was signed by Bush.
Yeah, Education and Sharing Day.
Yes, National Education Day.
Oh, it was National Education Day. I'm wrong. Okay.
Well,
I thought it was National.
It's very important that you brought it up. It's called National Education and Sharing Day because they talk a lot about education using education, but then they define Noah Hyde Law as part of education. You know, that's how they're getting it in. And Rabbi Schneerson, who is the one who is really behind this, not the only one, but who's really behind it, stressed a lot using education because what he said, if you can apply these Noah Hyde laws through force, do it. If you can't, do it through pleasantry and kindness. So they can't force it on us yet. They're working on that, but they can't do it yet. So now they're trying to subvert what it means to educate someone and what morality is. And so they use this word education a lot. And actually, we talked about the United Nations and that Rabbi Cohen, the Institute for Noah Hyde Code, he said, somebody asked him, they said, how did you get that law passed if there's separation of church and state? And he said that because they submitted it as education, not religion. They said that Noah Hyde law is education, and that's how they got it in, without raising any alarm.
Do you know that the Noah Hyde laws go back to Rabbi Maimonides? Maimonides was encouraging. I was reading a newsletter of Mike Hoffman II, and how Maimonides was even talking about it in the Middle Ages, the Noahide laws, so it goes way back. Are you aware that the very ideas of the Royal Institute of International Affairs and UN and all that were also based on the return to Israel and British Israel.
Let Vincent answer your questions. Yes?
John Ruskin is the one at Oxford University that really started the Rhodes Milner Royal Institute of International Affairs, CFR, all that was started in before the Civil War.
Do you have a question for Vincent?
Yeah, but I'm talking about the Zionism, all that was all, and the idea of the United Nations was already, Ruskin was talking about the United Nations for
Do you have a question for Vincent?
Well, it's not a question, no, it's just stating.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling. I really appreciate that. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty, let's take Ken in New York.
Good evening, Deanna. I'm Mr. Bruno. I have a question. Are you familiar with any rituals in the Masonic order that have to do with possibly something to do with high anxiety, putting the initiate in a state of high anxiety, or actually leading to a sacrifice? And I have a point to this.
Not that I'm aware of. I know that Noah Hyde is part of their oaths. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with any kind of trauma-based I'm not sure about that connection.
Okay, and the point is that I'm on Long Island, and somewhere around 2008, it should still be on the Internet. I'm surprised it hasn't been scrubbed, but there's a place called Patchogue, New York, P-A-T-C-H-O-G-U-E, New York, and there was a Masonic temple, a small one, about a block behind the main thoroughfare, and an initiate was shot in this so-called ritual. And the person that did the shooting was a 76-year-old man, and he was never prosecuted for it. And the Masonic temple was allowed to stand for another 5 years, and then they covered it up with particle board, surrounded it, and I think they took it apart piece by piece and moved it, and a few years ago they finally built a new building on its property. The man's name that did the shooting, he said he didn't know there was a bullet in the gun, and the idea was to put the initiate in a state of high anxiety, and he put the gun up to his head. He had two pistols, and one of them had a bullet in it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know that they, I mean, I'm sure that they're involved in all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure that they're,
It is on the internet.
Okay, well, thank you for that.
All right, well, thank you anyway.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Ken. Okay, do you want to respond to some of the comments that were made?
Well, I'm not an expert on Freemasonry, so I don't know a lot about the rituals, and I don't know much. What I focus on is this connection to Noahidism, and I know that that is very, interconnected with each other, and that they are definitely, that the Freemasons are working for Noahide aims. That's basically what I can tell you about Freemasonry. But as for, I'm not an expert in Freemasonry. I don't really know more than that.
Now, Freemasonry does have punishments, for divulging, certain pledges that you make in.
Isn't that how the anti-Mason party got started? There was a Freemason who left. He started criticizing him and then he was found dead.
Yes, I think so. Yes. Yes.
The anti-Mason party. And then it started because, you know, people said that the Freemasons were, you know, they would kill you if you revealed their secrets and that they were, you know, this dark society, which they are. If you get high enough, it gets deadly.
Right.
And yes. They're very quiet. They're very quiet. The Freemasons are very quiet about this Noahide thing. I think that you're going to find that not tons of them, especially the higher levels, are going to come out against it. And I think that they're going to play the game that the Jews do where, you know, when it comes to criticism of it, you're not going to really hear them talk. You're not going to hear many responses. But, you know, like, you know, when it comes to making it look like something good, you know, because they try to make this seem all very moral, upright and something that, you know, seems good, and it's about peace, it's about bringing world peace, it's about uniting religions, all under one, about making us one brotherhood, and they play a lot of that kind of game. So I'm sure that the Freemasons are involved in whitewashing all of this.
Yeah, could you maybe address, if you would like to, Donald Trump, his daughter and his son-in-law, in their involvement and or dedication to
definitely. I have a whole section on my website called Trump, and I have a few articles there. First of all, Trump's daughter, so we've been talking about that Rabbi Schneerson. There is an organization, a Jewish organization called Chabad Lubavitch, and they are fanatical, radical Noahidists. They are the ones who are behind getting all of these laws passed and these proclamations passed and spreading the Noahide laws and running Noahide conversion websites, and their leader is Rabbi Schneerson. Now, Jared Kushner is a member of Chabad Lubavitch, this very fanatical, radical Noahidist sect. So when Ivanka Trump married him, she had to convert. And so she is also a member of that very radical sect. And on the eve, or right before her father's election, she went to go pray at Rabbi Schneerson's grave for her father. So there's definitely a member of that sect in the family. Now, whether he heard it or not, over in Israel, there is this growing Sanhedrin. I mean, maybe some of your listeners know what a Sanhedrin is. It is the highest authority of the Jewish religion, of course. And there is no Sanhedrin at this time. There doesn't need to be a Sanhedrin for Noahide law to be implemented, though. So some people will tell you that some Jews will say that the Noahide laws can't come into existence now because there is no Sanhedrin. Rabbi Schneerson put that in its place, and he is the one who is said to be the leader of world Jewry. The Sanhedrin has asked Donald Trump in an official proclamation to uphold the Noahide laws, and on the day of the election, the Israeli National News published an article where basically they said that President Trump, embodies the Noahide laws and is basically the most Noahide candidate. So there's definitely a connection between the Trump family and the Noahide laws, yes.
Right. Now, Jared Kushner, Kushner's father, financed or built a lot of the settlements, the new settlements in Palestine. And they're very, very friendly with Netanyahu. And in fact, when Netanyahu used to come to the United States, he would stay with the Kushner family. And then, of course, Trump, all the presidents, you will find, and you have it on your website, you will find that all of the presidents go to the wall, they put on a yarmulke, they go to the wall and put a piece of paper in the wall. What do you think is going on? I know it's, who knows what to think, what is going on, right? But with this so-called selection between Biden and Trump, is Biden more warlike? Is that why they've selected him? Or what are your opinions?
Well, I think that anyone who is in office is going to be influenced by the Noahide agenda. I think that every year we sign this proclamation praising Rabbi Schneerson, and I think that those same statements about the Noahide laws are attached to it. So every year our president kind of like signs off on these ideas, and I'm sure Biden will be doing the same exact thing. I think that this has so much power behind it that it doesn't matter if it's Trump or Biden, that whoever is in charge is going to be doing the Noahide bidding. Trump was a hard nut, I think, for the Jews because he was very pro-Israel. He moved to Jerusalem. He moved Jerusalem, but he wasn't really into war, right? And he didn't seem to, want to expand the war over there. And Biden does seem to be more on level with. Though now Israel wants him to bomb Iran, right? Isn't that what's going on now? And I don't know. I guess this is really a test of his loyalty because we don't know if he's going out or in yet. I think that would be absolutely horrible if he just, on his way out of office, he just dropped a bunch of bombs in Iran and left us with a war. You know what I mean? I think that would be a real test to whose side he's really on, who he's really working for. And maybe he's hoping that they have some way in helping him with this. And maybe he's saying, if you get me into the presidency, Obama ran. Maybe that's what he's saying. I don't know. I think that a Biden would be a little bit less interested in bombing Iran, but who knows?
Right. He was very instrumental in getting the United States in to bomb Iraq. And I'm talking about Biden. He was in charge of the Senate committee that was talking about warfare. And he changed people's votes. He was a warmongering person who has always he's a warmonger, a very greedy warmonger. And of course, all of these people in Congress know what is going on. They're going to invest in Big Pharma. They're going to invest in any company that is creating war machines and planes and everything else. So they're all making a big bundle of money off of killing people. They're all psychopaths.
I know, and I think that right now, I think that everyone is basically going to be helping this agenda, no matter who's in the office, is going to be helping this agenda. And I just think that it's important to separate the wheat from the weeds, get this information out there. There's the petition to sign to get the no hide laws removed. What's important is that this needs to be repealed by Congress. From what I know, I've spoken to many lawyers, this wouldn't go through the courts. It would go through Congress. You would get Congress to repeal it, though if they wouldn't, if they refused to, I don't know if you could take it to court then or what it would be. But let's see who's on our side and who's silent and, you know, who just wants to push this under the rug. But I can tell you right now, I think that people in Congress are going, even when they come to fully understand this, they're going to be very hesitant to get that deeply involved in repealing it, because I think that they know that would cause them a lot of trouble.
Especially when many of their campaigns are funded by certain people. They're in office because of their belief system. They didn't people who go to Congress are there because they've been paid to be there. They've been funded to be there, I believe. What is your feeling?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Many of the people that serve, quote-unquote, in Congress have been funded by the very people that we're talking about, or else they wouldn't be there. They have compromised their values to a point where they will accept money from anybody, and when you accept millions of dollars from somebody, then you're obligated to enact things that campaign funder believes in. So they're paid. They're compromised.
Yeah, no, well, Chabad Lubavitch is very much involved in getting politicians in their hands. I mean, they do have lots of money. They're extremely well-networked. They're all around the world. They are very popular amongst Jewry. They are allowed to bring in a lot of votes, or able to bring in a lot of votes, able to bring in a lot of money. They have connections with other people, other groups, so they can get you friends with other people. So, I mean, they do have a degree of being kingmakers, yes. And they also, you know, I don't know how much of a split there really is between liberal Jewry and the Noahidist Jews. People, like, you know, the last caller called in and she said, well, I would think that most Jews are, you know, don't think like this. Most Jews, from my understanding, from what I've been doing this for 7 years now, and I've been doing it a lot, most Jews are not going to say anything. Even if they understand it, even if they know what's going on, they're not going to say anything. They're not going to do anything. And if you bring it to their attention, I think that they will find very serpentine ways to basically give you a reason why it's nothing to worry about, or why they're not going to get involved, or why they don't want these laws repealed or anything like that. I think that when it comes to, even though these laws are very conservative, when it comes to them and it comes to protecting the image of Jewry, I think that you're going to find that both liberal and conservative Jews are, the conservative Jews are the ones that are pushing it, but the liberal Jews are complicit by their silence.
Right. And I also think that they ghettoized themselves. They separated themselves from other people because their rabbis insisted that they remain Jewish. They not intermarry, they not dress like the Gentiles, that they just stay separate. And so I think that when you grow up in a system that demands obedience to certain policies, that you're not going to break from that no matter what, because you have family, you have certain obligations to stick with the group. And they are the one country that is not pushing multiculturalism. And it's very interesting that, of course, we all know about Barbara Lerner Specter. And she says that Europe is going to have have multiculturalism, whether they like it or not. And I was thinking about this, and I thought, and she said, and the Jews are going to be blamed for it, but they have a lot to do with implementing multiculturalism. And so I thought, okay, the reason that people leave their countries, their native lands, is because of warfare, famine, terrorism. And I'm thinking, okay, so is that the implementation that she's referring to? Because people are not going to just up and say, gosh, I think I'm going to leave Iraq. They did it because the U.S. and its military and allies bombed the whole country to smithereens. They only have 4% of electricity. 500,000 children were killed because of sanctions. So it forces people to leave and go elsewhere. And so I'm thinking, okay, is that the way that they are implementing multiculturalism all over the world except in Israel? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that what they do a lot is the problem action solution. So what's very interesting is that the... Oh, are we about to take a break?
Yes, we're going to take a break and then we'll be right back. Are back with our guest, and his name is Vincent Bruno. His websites are stopnoahidelaws.blogspot.com and stopnoahidelaw.com. Okay, we have about 3 minutes. What are some of your not final statements, but what are some of the things that you would like to impress upon our listeners?
Yeah, I guess if you want to learn more about what we talked about today about Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, and Christian Science, go to bewiseasserpents.blogspot.com.
Oh, right.
And there's also, if you want to learn about Seventh-day Adventists and their anti-Freemasonry, go to buttharmlessus.blogspot.com. So those are the two side points that we got into, but like you said, there's the website. Please sign the petition. We need to get this petition to Congress, and Congress needs to repeal these laws because we want to send a message. Now, my thing is people often ask, well, when is this going to happen? Are we ready? I think some people might get a little bit alarmist. I think that they're in the preparation phase right now, but I think it's very important to push their hand, draw them out into the sunlight before they are ready, and make them stand accountable to this. They're going to have a lot of really good things about it. Well, it's not actually implemented. This doesn't mean anything. And you really have to be careful. Go through my website, both of them, to find how to argue about these laws. And
sign the petition.
Yes. Sign the petition. Send it to your congressperson. Please don't just sign it. Send it to your congressperson. Call your congressperson. Tell them to get involved. And, let's start, really, we have to work together in order to get this into the mind of Congress to have this repealed.
Yes, because as you mentioned before, not everybody in Congress is aware of it. In fact,
no.
I'm pretty sure that there are some particularly new congressmen. I mean, they probably know that they're funded by certain people, but they are not aware of the ramifications of a real law that was passed because so few people signed that law into law. And so they're ignorant of it. They know some enough to get elected, but I think it's important that we do sign the petition, and I posted the link in my chat room, and you can find that link at the website to sign the petition. There's a link there. Please do sign that petition. It's our future. It really is. Well, I would like to thank you very much for all the work that you've done, all the research that you've done. It's quite obvious that you've done hours upon hours and upon hours of research. And I appreciate you being willing to share that research with us, because it's kind of a difficult subject and one that's hard to talk about. So thank you so much, Vincent.
Thank you.
All righty, take care. Bye-bye, listeners.